Welcome to the CEN show, where we present the voice of the community. The CommunityEducationNetwork.com is a platform to aid the effort of self and collective improvement. I am your host, Roski Mascani. Tonight's topic is perspective on policing in America. Tonight's guest is Officer Mike. I met Officer Mike in the early 90s, and we became very close, just like we were family, like a first cousin. Officer Mike is an exceptional individual, and I haven't met many people like him that's so genuine and just have genuine care for his family and the community. Good evening, Officer Mike. How are you?
Well, hello.
Tell us more about yourself.
Well, hello there. You know, first thing I want to say is thanks for having me on. Been looking forward to this opportunity to get to talk to you guys. Just, you know, a little bit about me. You know, I've been policing going on about 35 years now. You know, I started young. You know, I started when I was, police academy back when I was 17. Policed in my small hometown. I did that for about 2 years until I turned 21, you know. And when I first got started, you know, it was kind of unique, you know, being the only black policeman, you know, in that town. You know, it was a town of about 10,000 people. So that was kind of an eye-opening experience. And then from there, I went to the big city, one of the biggest police department, next to the biggest police department in Texas. And I policed up there for about 28 years. Did everything from street patrol. I worked in the southern sector, which is predominantly black. Did that as a patrol officer. During that time as a police officer, you know, I worked in the gang unit. You know, did that for a number of years, and I did field training where I had opportunities to train other police officers, try to develop them into good quality officers. Then I moved up to supervision, became a sergeant, then ran, you know, patrol and did community policing. I was over that unit, and also I was over the mounted unit where we did crowd control, things of that nature. I hit about 27, 28 years there, I retired, and then I went to a smaller suburban town, policed there as a supervisor. It was a predominantly a bedroom community. So I did that for about 2 years, and then I moved to the school policing to kind of experience a different aspect of law enforcement, you know, working for an ISD. So that's where I'm currently at now. You know, I've been there about a year and a half. So kind of seen kind of a number of different perspectives and things like that from the policing side of it.
Okay, that's interesting, man. I didn't even know you did another. I didn't even know you were at another police department. Mm-hmm. I thought you just went from the big city to the school police, but that's very informative and seemed like you have a wealth of information. Okay, so now in total, how many years have you been a police officer?
I want to say about 34, because I started in 87. That's when I got certified. So I think it's about 34 years now.
Okay. Now, what made you go into law enforcement? What was the motivation?
Well, you know, back when I was in high school, they had what's called an Explorer program. It's kind of like a branch of the Boy Scouts where it's dealing with law enforcement. So when I was 16, I joined the Explorer program. And basically, during that time, you start riding out with the police and learning different stuff. stuff, you know, dealing with law enforcement. So I took a liking to it. And that's basically what got me going. And then once I graduated high school, that's what I decided I wanted to do. So that's when I kind of went to the academy and got my college. And by the time I was right at 18 and a half, right at 19, that's when I became a policeman there at my hometown. Yeah, worked as a policeman there for about 2 years. That's what got me going.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so you currently work as a school police officer.
Mm-hmm.
You were in a small city, like you said, and then you went to a large city. Then you, so after the large city, you went to the next city was a suburb?
Where you worked as a police officer? Yeah, it was about 25,000 people.
Yeah. Okay. So you have these experiences, and then, so can you compare now? I said on paper, I said all three, but can you compare all four now? Because you have four different experiences.
Well, yeah, it was each place I've been has been totally different. Like I said, when I first started, I was, 19 years old, in a predominantly white area, with all white police officers. And it wasn't, and back then, it was in the 80s, and then back in 88, there was probably three officers on the shift. So I'm the only black officer. And so it was a little different, because I was trying to learn and all that stuff. And then you leave that small country town, move to the city, okay? And, when you move, the geographics of where my main place in Texas, I chose to work in the southern sector where it was predominantly, 90% black, right? Because you could put a wish list together, like which areas you wanted to go work. I put south, because I wanted to work in a black area where I could have an impact. So, and that's pretty much, and I was in the Southern Patrol area for about 10 years. Most of my coworkers, the other officers were black, supervisors were black. So, I really enjoyed that. And then, going into the gang unit, in the big city, there's so many different aspects of policing that you can do. Whether you want to be a detective, sit behind a desk. There's 30 different types of police jobs that you can do, and some of them you never put on a uniform. But my personality, I was always wanting to be in the uniform. I wanted to be in there out there with my people, trying to make a difference. And one of the most rewarding things being in the city was when I was in the gang unit, because to me, it wasn't about just locking people up. Whatever I did, I wanted to try to help people. So it wasn't just put you in jail. Whenever I had contact with people, you try to develop relationships. And that's what I enjoyed the most, is developing them relationships with the community. When you leave that, the city, and then go to another smaller town, it's a lot different because there it was mostly white people. So it's a different aspect of policing. You know what I mean? And at that point, in supervision, it's a lot different because, you're dealing with the officers versus most of your time is dealing with administrative duties versus hands-on in the community. Then, like I said, in the schools, it's totally different now, because of what you can do with the kids in the schools and all that. So it's been a big 360, I guess that's kind of how I could basically sum it up. From each different place that I've been, it's just been a big change. You know what I mean?
Now, when you went to the from the big city to the smaller city, you were a supervisor?
Yes. Yeah. I spent.
Okay, and you supervised a lot of white folks?
Exactly. Yeah.
So how was that?
Well, it's even basically a black supervisor when you're dealing with the white ones is totally different because they're going to really want to challenge you. And especially until they see you know what you're doing, you know. But like I said, it's a different world when you're moving into supervision because in this day and age too, the police officers are more, they're real timid. So they don't want to make decisions. So they want to put everything back on the supervisor. So the supervisors got to make all the decisions. You know, because, you know, everything that policemen do now is scrutinized so heavily, you know. There's a big difference.
Okay. Well, you know what I want to do? Brother Machend is here, and he worked in a gang unit, I think, youth services. Brother Machenda.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Machenda?
Yes, sir.
Now you worked with a gang unit before, right?
Oh yeah. You know, back in the day I sure did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so before we move forward with other questions before I have ask him a few more questions that I'm asking, did you want to ask him a question or have a comment so far?
No, I just want to welcome the guests tonight and appreciate you stopping by and giving your insight and wow, you know, just hearing your experience, you know, especially when you talk about the community and things like that, I mimic that a whole lot, you know. Of course, that was my whole philosophy when I dealt with that, I worked in a probation department, and I also, there was a gang suppression unit. That's what they called it. So, of course, they're trying to, and they had a lot of different ideologies, other than mine, And so I was an asset to the community while I was in there. I talked to a lot of parents. I work with juvenile, on the juvenile side, got experience working in those juvenile halls and things like that many years and was in supervisory positions and things like that. And so therefore working in the field, in the street, like you say, I got to applaud you for you giving that testimony, thank you for that, because, you don't run into a lot of people like you. However, there are other people like you that are within those systems, because I used to, I had some of my buddies, they said, man, how can you work down there, whatever, and you behind enemy lines? I say, well, I know where I'm at, it's deeper than this. I said, but at the end of the day, I was able to help a lot of kids, man, we were responsible for actually documenting them. And it was like, what? And it's like, what? This is like some kind of, slave thing. They're putting a tag on them and saying, okay. And just because they live in this area, of course, in the community and all that, so they had all these probation conditions and things like that. So trust me, I was in a position to where, it was an educational experience for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Very, very.
Yeah. Yeah, my goal was to keep people out of jail and not put them in jail. That was my whole goal. It's easy to lock people up when you're in that position of authority, just because, and that goes on.
And on that note, one of the good things, like I said, when you're in the city, there's so much you can do. Me and my partner that I work with, he kind of trained me in the games. We started a gang intervention and community outreach program.
Right.
So we was actually working with the youngsters, trying to give them different alternatives.
Hey, you was trying to, find the missing piece for them, and so they can move on with their lives, man. When I was in there, I said the same standards, the same documentation process that they use when it was going on, I would have been labeled myself, you know, and I mean, they would have had me labeled and marked just like that's what they were doing, you know? So I was on a mission there, and I did a lot of, a lot of good for the community and for the kids, you know, that, awesome. You know, because they, you know, it's a few hard heads out there. I mean, it's a lot of things going on in them streets. Don't get me wrong. But my goal was just, you know, I was looking for the good in them and trying to, you know, build on that. But, you know, and I didn't play around, you know, as you know, you had to be firm. But at the same time, but they were listening like they were my little brothers. And I tell you, the parents, I got the parents involved. That was the key, too. I got the parents, you know, not all of them, but a lot of them, I got them involved where, you know, so that when, you know, we, it was a little team effort, you know, so.
Right, right. But, kind of a partnership, you know.
Well, what's the goal? I mean, what are we trying to do? Keep people, you know, lock people up, keep them locked up, you know, the, you know, but again, I can go on and on about that, but anytime you can help, I guess the moral of the story is, I think anytime you can help somebody, you know, I think that should be our goal, is to try to, you know, help others and, exactly. you know, let, show love to people, you know, and that's it, you know, and the ones that are haters and are evil, we got to, you know, we got something for them, or just stay away from them, mm-hmm. you know, just keep moving, because there's a lot of perpetrators out there. But thank you for coming, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Brother Doctor, you also was another person in law enforcement. You have a question or comment?
I started in 1987 also, but, you know, thanks to powerful union, man, I was able to get out at 50 with a nice pension. Mm. And, you know, but I can confirm that one thing about being a supervisor, when I became a administrator over in the district, you know, mm-hmm. you work with all these guys, you know, as your peers, as your, you know, officer or whatever, but as soon as you supervise, you know, they change. Because when I became a supervisor over whites, all of a sudden, everybody wanted to question you. Everybody became expert on policy. But when you had the white supervisor, you never questioned him about stuff. But soon you get a black supervisor, everybody want to question you about policy, question you about mm-hmm. doing this, doing that. But they never question a white supervisor or a Latino supervisor. You know, they even tried to get blacks to go against you. To point out one thing you would do, you know, to get them to go against you. But yeah, you're right on that, man. Supervising mm-hmm. whites or Hispanics is tough, man, because they hate you as a supervisor. You have guys, you know, just don't want you to tell them anything. They feel that, hey, you know, they should be the supervisor. I remember having one guy, white guy, he had a master's, and all he would say was he couldn't believe that. He told this to another white person who wasn't into that and was telling us. He would sit there all day, talk about all the black supervisors, couldn't believe he had been supervised by somebody black. You know, and it's, you know, it's a racist, you know, law enforcement, it's a racist agency, man, all across the world. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody say, man, they're racist, man. Whites hate blacks, man, in the department, man. All my issues were with, you know, white supervisor, white staff. They don't have any issues. I worked in the prisons and went out to parole. Like, I worked tons and tons of task force, signed to different agencies. I worked with, LAPD, four or five different divisions, Pasadena, Irvine. I worked all over with everybody, man, signed a different mm-hmm. task force. And did the gang units, worked with multiple DAs, federals, doing stuff. Just some minor stuff going here and there when they needed someone. We all did as parole agents. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, yeah, man, that when you come as supervisor, man, that's the issue. The first thing to try to do is different get you world. Out of there. But once they learn that you're smarter than them, you know policy, you're a threat. You know,
you have to discipline one of them white boys, then they all coming at you.
Oh yeah. Everybody wants to file in. They want to file.
Yep, and you have to put some paper on them.
Yep. So when you get paper on it, they want to file and make up stories on you and try to get other blacks in the unit to go against you.
Yes, sir.
You know, so yeah, man, exactly. it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we just had three other people join in, Brother Hembrick, Sister Aziza, and Brother Thomas. So I'm going to get with you guys after the next round of questions, and I'm going to go to Professor Ra. Professor Ra?
Hey. Boy. You know, Brother Mike, I appreciate you. This is Sante San, which means many thanks for your presentation thus far. I just have a few questions.
Yes, sir.
Both related to, is your school district police hired by the, are part of the police department, or are they part of the school district police?
Yeah, where I'm at now, we're part of the school district for the ISD.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have your own chiefs and own procedures, police cars and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah. you do get bag up and support from the regular police if needed.
Yes, yeah. If we need them, they'll come help us, yeah.
Okay, then second, from that standpoint, are y'all considered police or public safety or safety officers?
No, we're police officers.
Okay, with arrest power and and things of this nature. Now, when you arrest juveniles on campus, if it calls for an arrest, like, you know, it's that bad, do you have to give them the Miranda?
Well, here in Texas, the only time you have to quote Mirandize somebody is if you're asking them specific questions related to a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's just a visual assault where they try to fight and pull a gun or whatever, and you don't have to question them regarding the case, then no, you don't. But if it's something like an investigator has to start doing some questioning, things like that, then they are required to be Mirandized.
All right, because there was recently, and I can't remember what state, the police went out and arrested some 6, 7, and 8-year-olds for being at a fight and not breaking it up or posting about it. Yeah, but that I'll get to that later. I got some other questions.
Okay.
Are you a member of the NRA?
National Rifle Association, no.
Okay, all right, good. Okay, police officers. Mm-hmm. Now, are you a member of the Brotherhood of Fraternal Order?
No.
Okay. All right. That's the union, for National Union for Police.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. NRA. The other thing is, when you talk about being in gang suppression, well, first of all, in L.A., you know, they Black Lives Matter movement got police mm-hmm. off of L.A. Unified School District campus. Mm-hmm. They're not, and they support them with safety monitors. But let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Rampart in L.A., the scandal of Rampart with Rafael Perez, and the gangs that are part of the police department. The FBI investigation talked about the executioners and the Bambinos, and we had a group called the Vikings. These were different. They were part of the LA and the Sheriff's Department in California. Do you have a gang problem in of police being members of gangs in Texas? And because they call the police a gang anyway.
Right. And let me see if I can kind of clarify what you're asking. Like, you're saying like police officers being actual members of like Bloods and Crips sets. Is that what you're talking about?
No, they're not members of their sets. They're members of their own set. They formed gangs in within the police department. Aside from being brotherhood officers, they had a group called the Executioners in Compton that used violence and suppression of street justice on
these individuals. Were police officers.
Yes. You never heard of police officers like that here. You never. What about the Texas Rangers?
Well, that's a whole different aspect. You know, when you talk about the Rangers, the Texas Rangers is part of like the Texas Department of Public Safety. And they're the quote, they ended up, you know, it kind of goes back. Now, if you go back in some history, and I'm not real diverse in it, but I know a little bit about it. When 30, 40 years ago, when they were to be a ranger, you had to be it was all pretty much all white people, white officers that were rangers. But now they've got some blacks in that capacity now. But I kind of know where you, I really can't really talk on it, but I know it used to be quote, little gang back in the day is what they used to call it, you know.
Yeah.
And so the Rangers were something else, you know.
All right. Then my last two questions, if you don't mind. Have you heard about this concept, qualified immunity?
Yes.
What's your position on that for police officers? It's for all public officers, public officials. But what do you think about the move by some states are making a move to get rid of qualified immunity?
And just to make sure I'm tracking on the same page, you know, I know what that qualified immunity is, but to make sure I understand it and can talk about it right.
You mean you can't sue police officers? You can't sue police officers or public officials, even if they violate your constitutional right. Individually, you can't sue them.
I think based on, it should be a case-by-case basis. Now, if an officer does something that's obviously wrong, where he shoots a guy running away from him and he shoots him in the back, where I've seen happen numerous occasions, then qualified immunity shouldn't apply. He needs to be dealt with the full extent of the law. It shouldn't be no qualified immunity on that.
But it is. It is. You can sue the department, but you can't sue the police officer. That's why,
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, you know. So like I said, if you got them devils out there and they doing wrong and they get caught up, they need to be sued, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because they shouldn't.
What's your position on these new gun laws in Texas? Where you can.
Well, I think, you know, the gun laws are for the, you know, people that get the license. I really rather see people getting a license because then you have to get some training, stuff like that. For the gun, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what we got here in Texas, and it just went into effect in September, is open carry. So basically, anybody, if you're over 21 years of age, you can carry a gun on your hip. It don't have to be covered up or anything. So what's happening is these people ain't got no training. I would rather for these people to at least have to have a license. You know, I don't mind good people carrying the guns. And if you go out there and get trained with it, all more power to you. But what I think this law is more for them white boys that want to just have a gun on the hip so they can shoot black people, in my opinion.
Okay. Other question, what do you think about all these police officers? There's firemen and nurses too, but that's against vaccines, of COVID vaccine, and the unions are fighting COVID vaccines, even though they're sworn to protect the public. And you know, and things of this nature, but there's a large movement in California and in Chicago and New York where firemen and police are demonstrating against mandates for them to get vaccinated.
Well, I think it's one of those goes back to Trump, okay? Because here in Texas, the reason people don't want to do it is, I think, it's because of Trump. If it's all just trying to be defiant, in my opinion. And I think that I know in Chicago, you know, David Brown's the chief over there in Chicago, and you know they got a black mayor over there in Chicago as well. And they was trying to suspend those officers who didn't want to get the shot, okay? But I think courts and stuff are trying to say it's unconstitutional, this, that, and the other. But yeah, why wouldn't you want to get a shot if it possibly might save your life, you know?
Well, are you familiar with the George Floyd Justice and Police Act?
No, sir, not specifically, no.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the one about police reform to a certain degree, you know, with regards to holding police accountable and, you know, stopping the no-knock entries. A lot of little caveats that police enjoyed talking about at the donut shop. You know, I kicked in the door, I beat it, but I took, you know, all that. But what I'm asking you, you know, because the legislation was introduced by Karen Bass of California. She's getting ready to run for mayor out here. But she introduced the bill, and Cory Booker, and the white boy from North Carolina, South Carolina, get his name, Tim Scott. They all were supposed to be working on it, but they abandoned it because they couldn't come to terms on it. And remember in Texas when the girl shot the brother, she went into the wrong house, wrong apartment. Yeah. Is there any more info on that? And what's your position on that?
Well, you know, I think the bottom line is this, okay? You know, I've been doing this job a long time, okay? Mm-hmm. And first of all, I think if you're in a uniform, right, you are still a police officer, okay? Whether you're off duty or on duty, okay? You were on the second floor, okay, of a building. So it ain't like you could just run out the back door and be gone. So in that scenario, man, why couldn't you just, when you open that door and you saw that dude standing there in pretty much his underwear, why couldn't you just pull the door to, back up, get on your radio, call for cover, okay? And once the other officers arrive, then you go in and deal with the situation. But, you know, I hate to say it, but I just think they saw an opportunity to shoot a black person, they shot him. That's just my personal opinion.
All right.
Okay, let's get back to the questions and then I can go to the other three panelists. Okay, what advice can you give black people when they're pulled over by the police?
Well, you know, I think the number one thing is to be respectful. You know, if you, because I've dealt with it numerous times, because me personally, I don't want to write nobody no ticket, you know. So, what, especially, you know, and I'm going to speak from the black neighborhood because that's where I spent the majority of my time, okay? You know, if you pull up to a car and they got the music blaring as you walk up, they won't roll the window down, this, that, and the other, then you got the puff of weed that's coming out the car, and then they wonder why it ends up in a negative context. So the key to it is just be respectful. And if the officer asks you something, you know, give it to them. You know, because the main thing is, on side of the road is not the time to sit there and argue about it. You know, if I get pulled over tonight, first thing I'm going to do, if I see them lights come on, put my signal light on, pull over, I turn my dome light on, have my hands up on the steering wheel, open up so it won't be no mistakes. I roll my windows down. You know, and I tell him, hey, I got a gun. It's right here beside me. And I'm just making sure there's not going to be no mistakes. So that's the main thing. Just try to be as compliant as you can when you're out here on the side of the road, man, because, you know, don't give them no opportunity to have to try to arrest you and all that stuff.
Okay. That sounds about what I would do, you know.
You got a lot of people that do the opposite. It's like they want a confrontation, and then when something happens, then they feel bad about it, you know.
Yeah, it's a
brother Roster Keith. What about Elijah McCain? He was just walking home. What about? I mean, there have been times when police just jumped on people. Though they didn't say nothing, they didn't do nothing. Elijah McCain was on his way home from the store, and he had, you know, in Denver, and the police he was begging for his life, you know. And what about Eric Gardner?
You have situations
he was begging for his life.
Yeah, those extreme situations where. You know, you got the Ku Klux Klan party out there after you, and no matter what you do, they gonna try to get you. But you know, I have a strategy when they pull me over. That's all. And then the strategy is respect has something to do with it. But I always ask the officer, "How are you?" I say, "How you doing, officer? May I help you?" That is my code. And I walked away every time. But if I'm faced with a Ku Klux Klan party coming to get me, I understand that y'all might be going to a funeral. You know what I'm saying? I understand.
That's when the police pull you over for a ticket or something. But I'm talking about people getting shot in their back. This man got shot seven times in his back.
That's the Ku Klux Klan. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
You know what on that particular piece, okay, I'm going to tell you, the best thing for Black people that I've seen in 30-something years of policing is the video cameras. Because if it had not been for that video camera out there filming Rodney King, we would have never heard about that. That guy would have just been put in jail, beat up, and you know what I'm saying? We would have never known about it. So the video cameras have changed policing. And I think it's really made things a lot better as far as what cops are doing. Because now they, you know, even though that George Floyd killer, I got a feeling, I'm going to be honest, my gut tells me that he was into it so much that he forgot them cameras was running. But man, them cameras have really made a big difference out there because it keeps these people honest for the most part, you know? And that leveled the playing field, you know? Because now, you know, with these new reform laws, I know in Texas, they just came out with something in September. It's called the Botham-John. It's something about they got to make sure them cameras, they can't cut them off now. You know, used to you could cut them off in certain situations, but now they got to stay on. You know, you got the car camera, you got the cameras around the, on the officer's shirt. So it's really made a big difference, you know. And when I was referring to the traffic stops, you know, that's just a general. You know, when officers pull somebody over for speed and things like that, you know?
Yeah. Now, so that kind of segues into what I was going to ask you next, how have policing changed from 30 years to the present? So did you already answer that?
Well, I think it's changed tremendously in regards to, it started changing with the Rodney King, you know, the Mark Furman and the O.J. Simpson trial, the lying, things of that nature. And if you notice, it's been looking, I don't know about y'all's way, but here we getting a lot of people that were charged with different crimes. Now that stuff, this DNA and all that stuff is getting them out of jail because it wasn't them. So it's a lot of things are starting to change, man. And I think it's changing for the better. You know, with the advance of technology and this, you know, video cameras, things like that.
All right. So one or two more questions, and I'm gonna go to the other three panelists. What advice would you give someone who's considering a career in law enforcement?
Well, I think it's got to be, you got to love people. You know, this can't be a job that you're getting in just to make a living. You know, and having been working with all different types of people, races and things like that, you know, I've seen people come up here and they come from Wyoming. They've never been around black people, okay? And you put them out there in an all black area, every day they're in fights because they don't know how to deal with the people and they're scared of the people. So that's not a good combination. And one of the things that you've got to do is you got to treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat people the way, as an officer, and the reason I enjoyed this job for as long as I have is because I treat people right. I treat people the way that I would want somebody to treat my mama on a traffic stop. And that's kind of what I instilled upon my recruits, you know, when I was training them. So you got to be invested and want to try to make a difference, because if you just coming out here to lock people up and that's what you thinking, you know, if that's your goal is how many you can lock up every day, you won't last, you know. And one of the things that's rewarding to me is 95% of the people that I took to jail, if I see them at Walmart tonight, they'll come up and talk to me, because I didn't just lock them up. I used the time that I had with them to sit there and try to give them information to help them. And it wasn't just about, you know, when you work a beat, you know, you see the same people every day. You don't just pull somebody over and write them 6 or 7 tickets, which is going to cost them thousands of dollars in this economy. You try to help them. So if you do that, you'll have a long, successful career in this job, because the people in the community is going to respect you, and then you can actually make a difference in people's lives. And that's what I've, you know, focused on, you know. And that, to me, that's how you have a long career in this business, is trying to make a difference and trying to help people.
Okay. All right. That's good. All right. I'm going to go to the three panelists that showed up after we got started. All right, Sister Aziza, you have any questions or comments for Officer Mike?
No, not at this moment. I think the last comment, or you know, the last thing that he was saying about when he pulled somebody over, he would show them treat them the same way that, you know, he would treat his mom or want his mother to be treated. I think that's a you know, a good thing that he had, and then trying to make a difference in somebody's life. Because most people, you know, that does police officers or are police officers, they probably don't have that same mindset, and that's probably why, you know, they have a lot of trouble. But I'm going to end my comments here. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank
Brother
you.
Brother Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Question, comment.
Well, I was listening to you, to the brother. What's the officer? What's your name, sir?
Mike.
Brother Mike, Officer Mike. Yeah, I was listening to what you were saying, and it just seems kind of like you're, you know, you say a lot of good things, like what you believe. You know, like when Baba Ra asked about the immunity, and you felt, you know, that if somebody gets shot in the back or whatnot, you know, that's wrong, and when they're running. But that's kind of extreme. Law enforcement breaks laws that maybe that are not as extreme as shooting somebody. They break, you know, I've read about law enforcement officers breaking basic human rights when it comes to questioning people without cause, without giving them the Miranda rights, basic violations when it comes to searching property without a warrant, questioning the individual without a lawyer present. Always defaulting to the description of the suspect to justify, you know, to justify the violation of rights, basic rights to citizens. I've also noticed that the judicial system supports law enforcement officers that do that. They back them up, you know. What is it called? Guaranteed immunity, pretty much. Is that what it's called? That goes beyond killing somebody that's unarmed or in the back. My concern is that there's no check and balance when it comes to basic human rights being violated. Not just killing, but the basic human rights that leads to fines that Black people or people of color can't afford to pay, and then they are institutionalized as a result of it, given misdemeanors, or, you know, they're somehow filtered through the penal system because of inability to pay tickets and fines, which increases the mass incarceration rates of our people for basic offenses. My concern is, you know, you're saying some good stuff, but my concern is that the actions maybe don't follow through when it comes to what you're saying, because basic human rights are being violated outside of the extreme obvious, the extreme obvious violation of the law as it pertains to killing somebody, shooting them in the back while they're running, or shooting an unarmed person. Basic human rights are being violated by law enforcement, and it's going unchecked. It's going protected by the judicial system. It's like a free range right to violate basic human rights of American citizens, particularly of color, as long as they're not killed in the process of their rights being violated. I want to know your position on what should be done with police officers that violate basic human rights of citizens in America under the guise of the default excuse. You fit the description, or the fact that they're searching somebody without consent. They're questioning somebody without a lawyer. They're finding somebody for frivolous charges based upon whatever excuse or reason the cop wants to come up with to make an example of the individual that they're, you know, equestering. You know, how do you feel about those violations?
Well, you know, I use that example that I use because that's kind of the biggest topic here in Texas, you know, when dealing with that qualified immunity stuff. But, you know, as a regular patrolman, as a police officer, and that's what I did. I ain't really ever did the investigative end, like dealing with murders and homicides and dealing with the investigation part. So I really can't speak on that from that part. But I think what confuses people, and I know laws are different in different states, okay? But here in Texas, you know, search incident to arrest, you know, you don't have to have consent for that. And then we have a lot of different exceptions to search warrants, things like that, that come into play when officers make arrests and are on different type of scenes. Now, if an officer does something that violates that, you know, the Constitution, you know, the laws, then yeah, they can be held wrong. If they do it, if they are wrong, then yes, qualified immunity shouldn't, my earpiece fell out. Qualified immunity shouldn't protect them. You know, if you're doing something that's obviously against the law.
Yeah, I feel interviewing. Yes, sir.
Because happening too now, and I think the biggest difference that I see is now all of your interviews, things like that, are all recorded. So if they didn't meet the criteria for a warrantless search, or if the suspect said, "I want a lawyer," and they didn't cease the interview, then yes, they violated the law. So no, I don't think they should be protected with the qualified immunity if they normally violate the law.
Are there anything intact? I mean, like I believe that, you know, the judicial system protects law enforcement. So, you know, if the judicial system, like for you mentioned the Amber Geiger law in Texas that they have because of that Amber Geiger situation, that Botham John, you called it the Botham John law or something. And it was because this police officer shot and killed a black man in his apartment while he was eating ice cream and said that she thought it was her apartment. And clearly there were evidence that that was fallacious. And that people heard a verbal dispute, and that there was a red mat in front of the apartment that distinguished the door that she came to. Mm-hmm. That you know, and it all just was fallacious because, you know, you have to look down to get your key to kind of like open the door, and to see the red mat in front of you, knowing that your apartment doesn't have a red mat in front of it, because they're all identically without red mat, without anything in front, with exceptions of both them Johns. And the judicial system protected her. She only got 10 years. The judge hugged her. The bailiff fixed her hair. And they were black. That was a shock. They were black. But she got 10 years. And it wasn't a federal offense, so it's maybe like 5 with good behavior. She's going to get out. And that's what I'm talking about, Brother Mike. That is just a judiciary issue. The law enforcement has a free range ticket to violate law, qualified immunity, and the judicial system minimizes their convictions, minimizes the sentences. So what do you say about that as a law enforcement officer? How do you feel about the injustice in the judicial system to protect law enforcement officers who are blatantly in violation of the law and that are getting slap in your hand sentences based upon capital offenses, brother? How you feel about that?
Well, I think you've got the evil one that's doing wrong needs to be dealt with. And it needs to be handled in a case-by-case basis. You know, you've got Good Samaritan laws out here that protect, you know, if somebody passes out and you try to do CPR and you end up causing more damage, there's laws that protect you as a Good Samaritan for helping them. You follow me? So all police officers aren't out here doing bad. You know, it's you got some devils out here, and them devils need to be dealt with. But, you know, we just, you got a lot of police officers that care about the community, that want to do the right thing, that are trying to do the right thing. But if you do something that's wrong, it needs to be dealt with.
One more question. I heard you say stuff like, I really, really appreciate you being here. And I heard you say there's a lot of police officers that do a lot of, you know, that want to do the right thing. But aren't those, there are a lot of police officers who you say that are want to do the right thing, know the police officers that aren't right and that are in violation of the pledge of the police pledge that they had, put their right hand up to enforce when they graduated from the police academy. Don't those good police officers know who the bad ones are? Yet we don't hear it. We barely hear if any of those good police officers turning in, reporting those bad officers. Isn't that like accessory? If I know somebody who's committed a crime and I don't report it, doesn't that make me an accessory to the crime? Was it fair to say
most
that?
Definitely those, does.
Is it fair to say that those officers who are good with intentions to serve, but they protect the officers that are not abiding by the code of honor that they pledge to enforce, but they protect them by benign neglect, by not, you know, reporting their deeds? Aren't they considered accessories? What do you say about those good officers that you say, but they don't report the bad ones, and the bad ones still are on the force, violating the laws, disrespecting the code of honor, and in turn, even disrespecting the good officers by spreading a bad name to the law enforcement officers that you say are really there to, you know, that are passionate about doing their job? What do you got to say about those officers that are good, that protect the officers that are bad by not saying anything or reporting them?
Well, if they're not reporting it, and they got, if one of his colleagues is doing something illegal and they're not reporting it, they're just as much illegal as they are.
So wouldn't it be fair to say we got to clean the whole system up and come up with a new policy to recruit officers that are really passionate about their position, that to the point where they would turn in their colleague if they were disrespecting the oath? And I mean, the whole thing is like a refrigerator that's been saturated with rotten meat so long and so bad that you got to get rid of the refrigerator and buy a new one and store new food inside of it, start all over. I mean, I don't see anything changing with the administration and the officers that we have, because they're being protected by the good cops. The bad cops are, and then they're being protected overall by a corrupt judicial system. I mean,
I disagree with you on that, you know, because.
So what's the solution?
Well, if I had the solution, you know, I'd be a police chief or something, but I don't have the solution to the whole problem.
But my solution is a solution to your non-solution. It's like your position is, let's just keep it the same way because I don't have a solution. Mine is like, try something new because this ain't working.
So what is your solution then? What would you do then if you was in charge?
What I would do, brother, is totally recruit a new system, create a new system of police recruitment. Create a new qualification criteria for police officers. They have to do 2 to 3 years of community service, in an underserved community, and they have to be judged by that community to see if they're qualified to equitably serve low, underserved, and underrepresented communities. You know, they have to get a report from that community on their quality of service for 3 years. you know, just to make sure that they have the sensitivity and the respect to treat all people as human beings in a community that they're not familiar with. And you know, like you said, truly, truly can do their job because they view everybody as human beings from those 3 years of service that they did, volunteer service. You know, we got to revamp the whole system and create a new criteria of law enforcement because it's a public service. I'm an educator. And like you said, I shouldn't be a teacher because of pay. I should be a teacher because of passion and my love for humanity and love for the future of the next generation and thereafter, and wanting to do the best I can to bless humanity with law-abiding, intelligent, independently free-thinking, and positive law-abiding citizens. And my service before I was a teacher reflects that. And a law enforcement officer needs to have a history of service before he becomes a law enforcement officer to reflect his intentions to be an awesome, obedient, law-abiding, equitable, just public servant as well. Anybody that hasn't done that needs to be you know, required to take 3 years of volunteer training to be reinstated in their post. And then they need to have the recruitment of recruit new law enforcement officers that also fulfill that qualification. Clean house, brother. They got a clean house because this house is dirty. It's corrupt, as you so eloquently said about them devils. I'm done.
Yeah, I agree. You know, yeah, there's got to be continual change. There's got to be improvements in the recruiting processes and all that stuff.
Yes, sir.
You know,
I appreciate you, Brother Mike, man. Thank you for having the courage back to be on, bro, because, you know, you are one of a million that even would be on a platform like this. So I commend you, young brother.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother Thomas is passionate about reform. Excellent, excellent. All right, Brother Hembrick.
Yeah, I came in late. I don't know what city the brother's in. I missed that. Well, what is the city in Texas that he's working out of?
Well,
I'm up around Dallas area, yeah.
Oh, Dallas. Are you a school police or a...
I am currently, yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, well, just to piggyback off some of the stuff Brother Thomas was saying, I'm a firm believer that officers need to be recruited and work in the areas that they come from. That will eliminate a lot of, you know, the know-how that officer needs to operate in a certain area. You can't take.
And on that topic, you know, like I kind of mentioned earlier, what I've seen. You know, if you bring people in, like from far off that ain't been around Black people or different Hispanics, they don't know how to interact with them in the community. And that's why, and there's some of them that every time they have to arrest somebody, they have to fight because they can't communicate with them. So that's at least one thing that can be done is do more recruiting from the community.
That's the same thing I say about a lot of teachers also in education. You got some Europeans that come from three counties to Compton to work. And I always ask, you know, how come they're not working where they live at? Are they not qualified? Or they the bottom of the barrel and they just come here to get a job and get paid? But getting to the crux of law enforcement and police. You know, I'm the historian, so I got to take you back to its beginning. That star, that badge, was first started to capture, you know, runaway slaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it was. Its inception comes from, and so it's a long history of that. And down through the years, you know, you see some change here or there, you know, Rodney King, and even though they had the camera and all that, still didn't change nothing. They were still not guilty. I just have a serious disdain for them, you know, and I work with the district, you know, police for a lot of years, you know, primarily to provide safety for the students. We had a program called Safe Passage, where kids have to have a safe pathway home to stop them getting jacked and all that. So we would have it in the morning when kids would come to school. We'd have probation officers, school police, and other, you know, district officials along the routes that kids came to school, and also at dismissal, we would have people along those routes to kind of cut down on some of the kids getting jumped on, robbed, beat up, and all that sort of thing. We even had it time with the bus, with the public transportation, to be there at a certain time so the kids wouldn't have to be waiting on the bus stop, which was very successful, got funded by the state. I don't even think Compton has that anymore. But anyway, it's a tough job. I know it has to be done. But for them devils out there, I'm still at a position until someone gives them what they're giving us, it ain't gonna change. I mean, what Dr. Clark was saying about the Rodney King verdict when all of the rebellion broke loose. He said all of that was for nothing, but by 12 midnight, all of them cops should have been smoked. So, that's kind of my position on it. But down there in Texas, man, you guys got some strange laws down there, buddy. That's a state.
Yeah, it's a different world, you know.
Oh, yeah, it is. I got relatives that was jailed for peeing outside. And you better not throw no paper down in Texas, Jack. That's a $1,000 fine for throwing down paper. You see them signs all as you ride through there. Don't mess with Texas. And I certainly don't intend to. I had a niece who wrote a check, bounced a check for $20, and she had to spend 2 weeks in jail. Behind that, you guys got. I remember when I was a kid when Bob Hayes got caught with a half a joint. They gave him 99 years. Them folks is crazy down there. But anyway, I know you're working under a tough situation, especially in the Dallas area, because Dallas is. And they're like Compton and somewhere. Are you actually in Dallas, or are you on the outskirts of Dallas?
Outskirts now. Okay. Yeah. But it's just as bad. Just a different, you know, clientele of people, but there's still the same stuff going on.
It's Frisco?
You get away from the city.
In Frisco?
Well, Frisco, you got stuff going on up there too, you know.
Okay. Anyway, that's all. I don't like.
And kind of back to kind of what you just said, you know, talking about history.
Yeah.
One of the things that I kind of started learning as I kind of, as I watched those watch riots and a lot of those different shows they had out there for a while, tell you what, it really opened your eyes to, it kind of let people, make you realize, you know, why people had the feelings they had with law enforcement. With some of the stuff that people were doing back in the 60s and 50s, you know?
And don't even go to the years before that. You know, the 40s, the 30s, and 20s, man. Them people really had a hard time with law enforcement. But
yes, sir. I agree 100% on that.
You know, it's kind of necessary. Like I said, I think things would run much better and smoother if the officers that work those communities are from those communities, because they, you know, they will be hip to the value system and how people function in those communities. And that would...
I agree 100% on that, sir.
A lot of that conversational stuff that goes on. So, anyway, until they straighten all that out, I'm kind of taking a position of NWA, and I don't mean no offense, brother, but I have very low regard for law enforcement. Anyway, hang in there and do what you got to do until you can get out, and
Appreciate you.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Just being in this system is tough. And, you know, we're working to dismantle it. So,
brother, just quickly. First of all, Mike, I want to say most people, especially African Americans and Latinos, support police. Most of them support the death penalty. Most of them, if you watch any study, police do more than just arrest people and give people tickets. They help find lost kids or lost husbands with people with Alzheimer's. You call the police. You call them, they're generally the first responders to loiterers in front of your business or in front of your home doing stuff. Even if it's the homeless that's doing bad things. Law enforcement is needed in a public society. What we're talking about is that 10% and probably in each department that shouldn't be police that gets away with abusing their trust. Their public trust are officers. I've taught many police officers at Cal State Long Beach, went on to be police officers. They had a sense of consciousness. But as Mike said, times have changed. The whole concept of police was to go out and protect and serve. Now it's, I want to go back. I want to go out and get back home alive, because of the temperament of people that attack police now with violence. I mean, with guns that's bigger than the police guns. I mean, ambush police. See, there was a time people would say, "Hey, look, I ain't gonna mess with no police," but you got people now calling in. I don't know. Police have to come through and make sure it's not an ambush, even if on a domestic violence. And that's one of the biggest calls they get. You know, a husband and wife beating the hell out of each other. But then they don't want to go to jail, so they start fighting, and they start fighting the police. It's not as easy, you know. But school police, I'm for school police, you know, because it's not the kids in school. It's the kids that jump the fence and come over there. That create problems in many instances, or the dropout, or the cat that just ditching school and just stay on campus that create havoc. And the drugs that the kids have now is not like weed or some whiskey or wine or a beer before they go to school out their mama cabinet or refrigerator or daddy's. I mean, they got some drugs that's psychedelic and give them the courage not only to fight the teachers, but to fight the police.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are not going to get in the middle of a fight, a major fight. Some teachers are, but most of them ain't. They locking their doors and they locking whoever didn't make it in. Then you better go find another door to get in, because I'm not opening my door. You understand? Because you know these kids. Some of these kids are big. Especially in high school, middle school, and they carry weapons. And even if you have search, they know how to put a weapon in, throw it over the fence before they come in and then go get it. All I'm trying to say is that I agree with Brother Thomas about police that don't, well, who's guarding the guardian? Police that misrepresent their badge, misrepresent the public trust. But we as an African people have always had disciplinarians as parents and as community leaders. That's what, you know, we always was taught to respect authority. And most kids do that. Most, it's the abuse and misuse of the authority and the camouflage of law. And like we say all the time, and you pointed out, Mike, a crime is a crime if a police committed or a citizen. But what Thomas is saying, and he's right, the police generally get away, some of them that commit the crime get away with it, because most people are pro-police. They have that qualified immunity and they're not held accountable. But like you said, Mike, now you got videos. Some have been held accountable. And some have been put sent to prison for various crimes. So, you know, it's a hard balance to balance the image that young people have of police versus the reality of the job. My son's a custom agent. And, you know, Kyle Jackson, I think, Orlando Green, all of them were LAPD officers. And they went to Black Studies at Cal State Long Beach. Even one of the guys that played, I forget his name, he lived in Riverside. He was a police officer. So it's a hell of a job in this day and age. But we need more Black police officers. We need more sensitive, conscious Black police officers that respect the human rights, as Brother Thomas said. That's all I have to say.
Okay. We're going to go to Brother Mashenda, and then we're going to go to Brother Doctor.
I had another question, Brother, when you get around to it.
All right. Go ahead.
Brother Mike, I have a daughter that's going to school in San Antonio right now.
Uh-huh.
And, she went to this Pueblo Island. Are you familiar with that? It's down there.
What's it called again?
I think it's Pueblo, Padre Island.
Padre Island, yes, sir. Uh-huh.
And they were driving. And I told her, I said, don't you stop in no small town. You make sure you got plenty of gas to get to another big city. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I know in Texas, and maybe there's more states than Texas, but you go through some of them little bitty towns that got 1,200 people, 700 people, and you run into law enforcement down there, it's a whole different world. And I was wondering if you experienced anything like that yourself, because I know Jasper, what was that, maybe about 20 years ago when Bush was the president, they killed his brother and drugged him.
Yes, sir, drug him.
For a couple of days. You know, stuff like that. I mean, that's crazy. So anyway, I just thoughts on that.
Yeah, we still got a lot of that stuff going on. The small little old bitty country towns where ain't no Black people. You know, it's only thing I can say, you know, thank goodness for them body cameras. You know, especially now, because the law requires them police to have them. But, you know, there's places I wouldn't want to get stopped at, you know, because you still got those types of people out there that might not care for Black people. So, you know.
And last question. How in the world can you go through one of them little towns and the officer that stopped you is the postmaster, is the judge, and all of that at the same time?
Well, we don't have that no more here. You know, I don't know any places like that, but it's, you know, one police, you know, that's about it. One or two at the most, you know. Yeah, but the judge is, you know, you still got them old good old boy places.
I was in a little town called Mundy, Munday. This is about 80 miles north of Abilene. And I was sitting on the front porch, and there was a little bitty town, the high school, the junior high, and the elementary school all on the same campus. Okay. And I'm sitting on the porch, just chilling. Everybody drive by. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing? Texas known for leasing, asking how you doing. And I went and played golf out on this golf course. It was out in the farm area. Nobody manned it. Just pay you $10. You put in an envelope and put in this mailbox and go on and play. And I was the first brother I hear in the history of that town to ever play in a golf course at that particular golf course, which was a little bitty 9-hole course. But anyway, I was reading in the paper where somebody in Monday well, I guess a neighboring town, was coming home, and these people were stealing all their stuff, had a truck backed up to their house, stealing all their furniture and all that. And this guy, you know, people had their rifles right in the back of the window of their truck. And he pulled it out and shot and killed every one of them and didn't do one day in jail or nothing. You know, I thought that was really bizarre. Now, if a brother out here did that, man, it cost you damn near everything you got to try to beat that case. But like I say, Texas is a strange state. And until they get up to modern times, I don't want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you're right, man. And I'm going to tell you, man, that Trump, you got a lot of law enforcement, especially the Caucasians, they really supported Trump out here. And that kind of shows you where their minds are.
All right, brother. Appreciate you being on.
Okay. Brother Doctor.
Yeah.
Anything?
No, it's quick, but it's about...
I can say, man, Professor Ron made a lot of good points. Brother Thomas, right on it, man. And like I said, man, I wasn't on the street, but I was on a bunch of task force, man, where I rolled out with them a lot, 8 hours a day. They just passed some laws here, Brother Thomas. Everything you just, half of the stuff you just talked about, they just passed the laws about a month ago, a few weeks ago. So we see how that turns out.
Yes, sir.
But Brother Mike, I understand you're still working, right?
As yes, law enforcement? In the schools now. Yeah, in the schools.
Okay.
Yes,
I give my hat off to you, man. I did total of 29 years. Mm-hmm. And we were able to go at 50. I left at 50, man. I could not stand one more day of that crap, man. And you know, it wasn't all bad, you know, but like Brother Thomas, all the stuff Brother Thomas brought up, I saw it. I'm pretty sure you're on the force right now, or when you were with the big department, you knew who the bad guys were, bad officers. You know, hey, like in my department, man, you know the guys you didn't want to go work with. You avoid them guys. You know they get in trouble. And when you hear something happens, you're okay, yeah, we knew. And Brother Thomas, you're like, you know, something Machinda said, you know, the complicit. He was talking about that last week. You know, I know right now, I always talk to the guys who retired. There's some guys right now in the department I retired from is racist as hell, man. They're right now controlling black lives. Racist as hell. The department knows it. These guys been disciplined for it. And nothing happened. They keep getting promoted. You got this guy that's a supervisor and overall is, and he sets, you know, you had a guy, you know, I would say, it seemed like, right, I met some good officers, man. Laid back.
The problem.
Didn't, you know, putting all into that. And they would tell you, hey, I've had white Hispanic officers come, hey, don't go around that guy, man. I was at his house.
Yeah.
All he did was talk about black people all night, racist jokes all night. I'm telling you because I'm thinking of the guy that's still working. He would sit there and talk about blacks, call them N-words all night long, and he's still working for the department. And he didn't know that his buddies would come back and tell me. Yeah, man, you know, this guy said this all night long. Everybody knew. So it's nothing going to come out of me go tell. Everybody knows. You know, you know who all the dirty people are. You just kind of avoid them. Yeah, they go out like Brother Ra. They go out, beat up people, shoot people in the back, and everybody don't know on the force. Like a Geiger, I'm pretty sure everybody knows she was crazy.
And
she
see the problem you've got is this: you've got people. You pulled up their record, the IED record. They got excessive force after excessive force complaints.
Right.
Nothing happens to them. Then when they do get, when they do get fired, an administrative law judge will give them the job back.
Right. Yep. That's what happened to this guy. He got fired a couple of times. I know the first time he got fired, he was going around telling people that Hispanic babies was more important than black babies.
Mm-hmm.
and they fired him. He got his job back.
Mm-hmm.
Then he did a couple of little racial things, but now he's in a position. He just talks about blacks in words. Going, only arrest black people. He gives mm-hmm. Hispanics kick, you know, let them go, and they still there, and no one does anything. They don't care, you know. And my thing, man, I I'm kind of different. I was there just for the check, man, for the retirement. You know, I wouldn't go in there messing with people out on the streets. I didn't have no short man complex. I'm a big dude, 6'2", 350 pounds. I didn't have to go throw my weight. No, hey, man, you do your thing. You know, if you do something, hey, put it this way. I had it where my caseload knew me. Hey, you got in trouble, man. I'm not going to come to your house. Just meet me at the station. Half my guys will meet me at the station, volunteer, turn yourself in. I wasn't in all that, man. You had a lot of guys who just wasn't into that stuff, man. They white, Hispanic guys, all they want to do is go to the games, go boating, fishing, and camping. They wasn't out trying to chase down people, beating them up and shooting them. Man, that's the last thing they wanted to do, you know, paperwork. Mm. But you had those two or three that would go out there and do the crazy stuff, man. You know, I'd be with officers. They would hate to go on calls because they, hey, officer such and such is working tonight. Oh, man, we're going to get into something tonight. And within 30 minutes into the start of the shift, you're getting a backup call from me. And I just want to comment on one thing Ross Key said. Yeah, I got a nephew. He wanted to become a law enforcement officer, man. My advice, I told him all the pros and the cons. I said, man, I had to do it all over, man. Knowing what I know now, I just wish I'd been prepared for all the racial stuff from administration. I wasn't prepared for that when I joined. I didn't know you working side by side with officers, they'd be so racist, man. I didn't know that until I got there and saw it. Because when I first started in corrections, they had this group called Sponge. SSPONGE, Special Society Preventing Them Niggas Getting Everything.
Hmm.
And they were mad because blacks were getting promoted. They'll go out, you go to work, you come out, your car be messed up, eggs be thrown on it, man. And they move all the blacks on the first watch when you try to stay up all night. And they had the NAACP come in, try to quiet that, man. But that was my first wake-up call, man. I say, wait a minute, something ain't right. But I never forget Sponge. Special Society Preventing Them Niggas Getting Everything. Mm. That was a click. It was like Brother Ross said, that was the gang click.
Really?
Yeah, I'm saying that. You had Ziska. Ziska was a Nazi. He was bringing in dope and weapons. I think he got 20, 30 years now, but everybody knew this dude was dirty. You know, it just finally caught, you know. It got caught up, man. But yeah, in the department, man, you know who the dirty people are. Nothing's going to change. Brother Thomas, you can't put out an application, you fire everybody and get some people to come in, some good people. Because what good person want to go do this job? Nobody, man. You're not going to find nobody that good-hearted will come on and do it. Law enforcement? If you're that good-hearted, man, you excel somewhere else. You know, you get the ex-athletes and the racist cops, the racist people to become a cop. They're mostly all blacks are usually ex-athletes. And mostly whites are racist. Like the brother said, they come from other states. They come here to Los Angeles, you know, just racist people, man. They've been bullied. Bullied, racist, and ex-athletes. That's basically all your cops.
Mm. Brother Mike, you have any comment about that?
Well, I think a lot of them, you know, especially when you bring people in and you, especially white people, if you scare the black people, that's why we got, I think that's a lot of it. They scared of them, and that's why they so trigger happy and so quick to want to fight, you know, and they think they want to lock them all up, you know, and them guys, you know, kind of alluding back to what the other guy was saying, them guys do they dirt by themselves. They're not going to do that stuff in front of people. They do it around their people. You know, because I'm going to tell you, most of the blacks that I know, they're not going to tolerate that.
So they know who to do that dirt front in front of and when not to.
I want to say one thing about my solution. Either you got two choices. You'd be like over in England, no cops have guns, or you do like to bring back the Wild Wild West days. Everybody has a sidearm. If you have a problem with a cop, you can challenge it to a draw. You know, and that will clear everything up. Take the guns away from the cops. You see most of these racist guys, they don't leave the force. That's when you get your good people. Because you take that gun away, man, they ain't shit. Take that gun away, man. You will not have, you have 95% of the problem will go away. Or go like the Wild Wild West days. Everybody, you turn 18, you can have a gun, two guns on your side. You get arrested, go to jail. As soon as they release you, you get your guns back. Go right back out on the street. Go away with that felony stuff. Everybody should have a right to bear arms. Even if you have a felony, man. Everybody should be able to carry a gun on the street. If you see an officer doing something illegal, you should be able to challenge him to a draw. If you win, hey, that's on him. You bury him. If you lose, hey, they bury you. If you bring those days back, 90% of this stuff would be gone.
Wow.
And now one other note. Yeah, if you want to go back to Texas Rangers, I think his name was, Bass? What was the first Black Ranger? Something Bass. Bass Reeves? I read the little synopsis. They got a movie on Netflix or something. Bass Reeves, he's the first Black Texas Ranger. The only way he got the job, they told him he had to go capture some outlaw by himself because no one else could capture this dude. And he went and got the guy. When he got him, they made him a Texas Ranger, man. I haven't seen the full story. I know it's on Netflix or one of these channels. I forgot the name was Bass Reeves. He was the first Black Texas Ranger. Mm-hmm. You know, look him up.
Okay. Interesting.
It's got to get better. That's all I can say. You know, it's got to get better.
Interesting. Okay. We're gonna end here. I appreciate everything, Brother Mike, Officer Mike.
I enjoyed talking to everybody and glad to be a part of this. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. Brother Thomas, Brother Hembrick, Brother Doctor, Professor Ron, Brother Machenda, Sister Aziza, everybody made a contribution. Excellent. Okay, Professor Ron, you want to talk about your upcoming shows, you and Brother Hembrick?
On the 15th, and I haven't gotten anything for the 10th yet, but on the 15th, my son's going to talk about stocks. I'm in Principal Rob. He's the principal of a school district. I mean, of a high school, and he's into cryptic coins, and he's starting his own coin. Cryptic spending and all of that. I don't understand it, but he's going to explain it. Why he have classes on his campus to teach kids. Is about stock investments and stuff like that. And then second, on the 29th, my other son, Koumba, who's a director of Cherry Creek Diversity School, and he worked close with Elijah McClain family, the kid that was killed by the police. He was killed by the paramedics. He was beat up by the police. The paramedics gave him a shot and he died, went into a shock, Elijah McClain. And so he's going to be here. And my son's also, he's also president of the NAACP in Aurora, California. And that's where that young man went in and shot some people in the theater also. So he has a lot of information about, you know, living out in Denver and the challenges they're facing. And so those are the two that we have. And me and Joe get together on the 10th. And I don't know, you know, who we're going to have then. But we may change the open forum to the first. I don't know. It may be the open forum. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Community roundtable. Yeah.
Okay. So on the CEN show next week, we got Ms. JW coming back. The topic is cultivating our curiosity for those who work in the system. So that should be interesting. So I'm going to end with each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Thanks a lot, everybody.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir. All right. Thank you, brother. Bye.